Welcome to Dana Delivers by Aprio Podcast,
the podcast that helps restaurant owners and operators learn from industry experts about trends and opportunities. On every episode, Dana Zukowski, the leader of Aprio's restaurant advisory team, explores a topic impacting our industry in a candid conversation. And now, let's hear what Dana is serving up on this episode.
Today we have with us Jim Bayless, who is the Managing Director and Head of Strategic Operations at Capital Spring, which is a private equity and financing firm dedicated to restaurants, as well as the CEO of Sizzling Platter. Hey, Jim, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Dana. Appreciate the time.
Thanks. So I always like to start out by saying the first time I met everybody who I speak to on these podcasts, and I always find it fun that they usually don't remember the first time they met me, but that's okay. I'm over it a little bit. So the first time I met Jim, it was when I was with a firm, SS&G, and I had just started and I was using some space in Capital Springs office for a meeting. And my partner, Alexis Becker, kept telling me about this great guy, Jim Bayless, who I can't wait, and she couldn't wait for me to meet. And one day Jim walked in and I was so excited. And I said, "Oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you." And Jimmy just said, "Hi, nice to meet you." But
that sounds
not so exciting for you, but for me it was. And now here we are 9 years later and a lot of other stories, but that was our first time we met. Let's start first a little bit about you, your background. Tell the audience who you are.
So I grew up in New York City, basically been a lifelong restaurant person, first job at 14 as a dishwasher, worked in the space, you know, pretty much my whole life, took a 1 year sabbatical sort of right after college. I went to Duke, actually started a catering company there and then have since, started a company called the Restaurant Management Group, which was an advisory firm in the restaurant space. Started that many years ago. Worked with a lot of lenders who had loans, restaurant loans were in default. Did a lot of turnaround work. Became a certified turnaround professional, specifically focusing on the restaurant space. And then from there, did work with not just lenders, but private equity sponsors like Capital Spring. Again, mostly in the turnaround space. And through that and other engagements, I've been the CEO of about 15 different restaurant companies now, maybe even more than that. I think it's up to 16 or 17. And so, fast forward to today, joined Capital Spring in February 2014, where I head up the strategic operations group there. And then also over 2 years here as CEO of Sizzling Platter.
Great. So I think one of the things that makes Capital Spring a little bit different and kind of looping it into what's going on in the world right now, traditionally we used to see dedicated finance companies who invested in restaurant groups and grew a portfolio. More recently, in addition to that, we're seeing big restaurant companies coming in and buying strategic brands or complementary brands. I think what's been fun to work with you guys at the Capital and the Capital Spring team is you guys are able to take your finance background and the operational side and put it together, which is where I don't want to say all of the CEO jobs you had were, but now Sizzling Platter is a portfolio company. So do you want to talk a little bit about how that all happened?
Yeah, I mean, Capital Spring is unique in that regard. First, that we focus specifically on the restaurant space, although, we're broadening a little bit as of late with our latest fund, but, historically have done only restaurant deals. We're actually on our sixth fund now. We've invested close to $3 billion in the space and over 60 different brands and currently have, I think, about 3,000 restaurants. And, in our portfolio, we are unique, too, that we don't just provide private equity type solutions. We also provide financing and then a hybrid of the two. So we really invest across the capital structure. So, everything from, financing unitranche through straight conventional, private equity majority positions. And you're right, it has been changing quite a bit You know, you're seeing more platform restaurant operators that are scaling, like Sizzling Platter, when Capital Spring got involved a few years ago. Sizzling Platter had, I think, 400 restaurants. We have 660 today, and we've added one new brand, and we're adding a second, hopefully, here shortly, or actually two new brands. We're adding a third. And so, you know, continuing to grow as a scaled business in that regard, and you're starting to see others similar to us out there doing the same thing. So it has changed a little bit.
Right. And I think what's also really nice is that the partnership that you guys have, by you now living as the CEO of Sizzling Platter, being able to take what's actually happening on the ground, bring it back to the fund, and then help disseminate information to help wherever you could.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, because we're dedicated to a specific space, you know, we have people, myself and a couple of others on the operations team that are focused and, you know, lifelong restaurant operators. And so, you know, we bring that unique perspective and experience. And, you know, just looking at deals, for example, you know, we see, I don't know how many deals a year that we travel, you know, manager meetings, books. And so, you know, we're constantly flying around. As we look at new potential opportunities and, you know, see best practices and best technologies and other things in the space, and that we can bring that perspective to our investments, some other benefits.
Right. So since you brought up technology, one of our favorite topics is automation. And in researching to talk to you today, I even looked at on Sizzling Platter on their LinkedIn paragraph, bio, whatever that LinkedIn calls it. It even talks about automation there. So give us a little, what's going on? What's your favorite thing you're seeing? Any predictions for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I've been speaking a lot about automation. Yeah, happy to share that. I'm not sure it's correct, but I mean, you know, automation is definitely coming in a major way to our space. We're, you know, similar to technology, where we were far behind relative to other industries. You know, the same applies to automation. You know, the fact that we can make, you know, microchips and nanoparticles and, you know, have yet to be able to figure out a way to make a burger or, you know, even a drink for that matter. So, you know, automation is definitely coming. It's coming in a variety of formats. You know, one area that is probably something that many of your listeners are going to experience here shortly, to the extent that they eat in drive-through restaurants, is, you know, voice automation at the drive-through, just similar to Siri or Alexa. That's something that, you know, clearly, to the extent that you can take the order taking out of the hands of a person, and that person can instead be assembling an order, not only can it reduce, you know, staffing and potentially save some hours, but, you know, order accuracy is improved, speed's improved with certain technologies. There's really one out there that we found to be far and away the best, whose name can't mention right here on the call, but, you know, you'll see that they upsell 100% of the time. So that's no doubt that's coming here. We have it in test in one Capital Spring investment store, moving into a double drive-through to see how it does in that scenario. We chose a geography with thick accents to make sure that it could, you know, navigate, you know, accents, and it's hitting 99% accuracy. So you're definitely going to see that technology. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean,
we need people to put together the burgers, because until Flippy starts working, we still need that.
Right. And look, you know, Flippy and Miso, they do a great job as well. They're working on a pizza product called Piestro that's very interesting. I'm actually speaking with them this week on that. But so you're definitely going to see automation back of the house, front of the house. It's the kiosk ordering. It's ordering through your phone. Ultimately, there's going to be very little need for a person at the front counter, so that labor is going to be saved almost entirely. You know, I think people, the more they've interfaced with QR codes and their phones, and then there's some pretty interesting technology utilizing cameras. We're testing a couple right now where they put cameras in the store, and they, you know, for those businesses that do decent, still, you know, lobby or dine-in business, they'll assess the speed of service that's harder to really, you know, nail down from, you know, a bumping of a screen perspective. looking at when a guest walks in the restaurant, orders, is handed their food. It can really precisely tell you what the ticket times are, but then more importantly, you know, which people working together using AI can produce the ideal schedule for specific restaurants.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
That's so,
yeah, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Now, look, you know, you may not be able to get to that schedule because certain staff members may not be able to work certain days, but it does give you, you know, who works the best together most efficiently, puts those people at your peak periods during peak days, which is very interesting and something. And a lot of the camera technology around, you know, they're looking at some on order accuracy. I think Presto is doing some interesting stuff there where they're trying to track, you know, the bag in a QSR burger concept, for example, you know, that, you know, make sure it includes two fries. And if it doesn't, you know, a big X comes up on the screen to alert the team member to correct the order. So there's some interesting stuff around cameras. You know, you're seeing, yeah, I mean, you know, just a ton of technology on geofencing, you know, using people's phones. And, you know, you'll be pulling up to a drive-through and they'll be on the screen. It'll say, welcome, Dana. You know, would you like to order ahead? If you're waiting in the drive-through line or if you're at the box, it might say your order's ready, or would you like the same thing that you ordered last time? So, you know, there's a ton of automation that's coming to our space, and, you know, everything from self-contained restaurants where you program in what you want and it makes it and, you know, hands it to you like an old version of the automat, except the food's made to order, you know, or other forms of automation that, you know, replaces people.
And kind of how you started, it's unbelievable that we haven't been able to figure this out yet, right? I mean, it's great that it's coming, but even I remember when I'd been discussing the license plate being able to be read and using the AI, it's like, if someone speeds and goes through a red light, they know how to find you. So why can't we figure out what that person ordered last time they were here? So
that's
again,
exactly right.
A little late to the game, but at least we're getting there. So very cool. I think one of the other things, I think kind of totally shifting gear from automation, is what's going on a little more globally in the restaurant space right now. So a lot of people, I think in the past 2 years with travel restrictions, have stayed really in the country. They've tried to figure out how to take what they have and make it better, as opposed to really go international. I know at Sizzling Platter, you guys are in Mexico as well. Is there a strategy or anything that you guys are looking at, whether it be with Capital Spring or Sizzling Platter, that is an international play, or thoughts on going global?
Yeah, I mean, we are looking at international opportunities, both at the Sizzling Platter level and the Capital Spring level. You know, restaurants are restaurants. Now, you know, you want to navigate, you know, socio-political issues, you know, governments that bear certain kinds of risk. You know, we're risk averse in that regard. So we want to be careful that, you know, to the extent that we look at an opportunity, it's, you know, in a location that doesn't have, you know, a leader that can all of a sudden, you know, shut you down or have other impacts to the business environment in that particular country. But, you know, definitely looking at opportunities, especially in the UK and you know, Europe, where the governments, you know, are more stable, the economies are more stable, you have the euro that's in place. And then the other interesting that's happening somewhat interestingly, I think, lately in the last, call it 24 months internationally, is historically, you know, you would see U.S. businesses move abroad and very little international businesses move to domestically here to the U.S. And you are starting to see, and, you know, we're getting inbounds of companies that are, I mean, Jollibee is a great example, but there are others, you know, that are very popular and have massive scale abroad. And they say, wow, we have this incredible addressable market in the U.S. Let's go after that. And so you're starting to see some international brands come here, which you hadn't seen in the past.
Right. I was at a dinner not too long ago where we went around and everyone had to say like their most favorite recent bite. And there were 8 people at the dinner and 4 people had restaurants in New York that they ate at. That was what they pointed out, that were all restaurants from London, which when you think of London, it really isn't such a food city. But the fact that that happened, we all kind of looked around. We're like, is this great for New York or not great, or what's going on here? But it was just a fun fact. So I think that's really my main things. I do also want to ask, what do you think, again, we're crystal ball prediction for what's going to happen in the next year. What do you think is happening in the deal world? I mean, as far as quality of earnings that we're seeing, our team is as busy as ever. We thought last year was going to be the busiest and it was going to kind of normalize a little this year. So far, last year is proving to be what might be a new normal. I don't, and again, that's just from sell side and buy side diligence that we're doing. What are you guys seeing as far as what's out there on the investment? And what do you think is going to happen in the next 6-12 months?
Well, I mean, to answer what's the first question, what's out there, you know, there's a number of deals out there in market. You know, I would say the deal flow's picked up a little bit as of late. And I think, you know, whether it's independent concepts that are looking to expand and want to bring private equity in, you know, we've been approached about that quite a bit, and are seeing some deal flow in that regard, as well as just general transactions where, you know, operators may be saying, this has been a tough couple of years, you know, I've given it everything I have, I'm not sure I can handle another 2 or 3 years of this. So the market, you know, valuations are, you know, strong, maybe not what they were, but still strong. So now's the time to sell. So we're seeing, you know, people take advantage of those opportunities or for whatever reason, exiting their businesses in that regard. And then, you know, as far as the future goes, it's, you know, always hard to predict what's going to happen in the future. You know, as I mentioned earlier, automation is something I think if anybody doesn't think that in the next 24 months that a great deal of the back of the house is going to be automated, you know, I think it's naive. I think we're going to see that come into play. The robotics manufacturers are going to, you know, engineer retrofitting robotics to make food, to process orders and so forth. And I think we're definitely going to see that. And then from the deal side, you know, I think, you know, the challenge is, as, you know, margins have been compressed lately as a result of inflation, both wage, you know, commodities and, you know, even controllable expenses, utilities are up and, you know, uniforms, plates, I mean, everything is being impacted by inflation. What, you know, what we're going to see here is you know, a bit of a gap between the buyers and sellers, where the buyers are trying to say, okay, you know, I really, it's hard for me to look at TTP because it includes, you know, periods from 2021, you know, where they weren't facing the same pressures. And then if you were just to run rate the most recent period, you know, that might be overly conservative. And so it's really finding that balance of, okay, you know, what's the right EBITDA that, you know, you're going to transact off of based on the current environment, how long it's going to last. And, you know, I think that's really the hardest part about transacting right now is having those open and honest discussions between buyers and sellers and, you know, private equity firms and even, you know, financing companies around what is the real EBITDA here going forward, because there's just so much noise in it from the TTP.
Right. Couldn't agree more, and having the same discussion. So at least whether we're right or wrong, at least we're on the same page. So Jim, as always, a pleasure speaking to you. And thank you so much for joining me today. And I'll speak to you soon. And thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you to all of our listeners to the Dana Delivers by Aprio podcast. If you like today's podcast, please hit the subscribe button. Dana Dish is brought to you by Aprio, a premier accounting and business advisory firm with offices across the U.S. and clients around the globe.